This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Look how excited and scared Billy is because he's been waiting 17 years for 2 p.m. today, and he fears that it's all going to be over by 2:30 p.m., what he's been waiting for, because he is a fear-based creature. I will try to do this segment without getting angry. We will see if I fail. I will try to do this segment without getting in trouble. We will see if I fail. Billy is doing the fish as Mike Ryan attacks me as I come in, telling me what the rules are now, what the rules are to stick to sports. Be careful. Stick to sports rules. Like, he hits me as soon as I arrive in the face with the stick to sports rule.
Just what you want to hear in the morning. But I will tell you, it's a good day to stick to sports because Marlins and then the NBA Finals, one of the biggest days in South Florida sports history.
It is a good day to stick to sports. It's also very hard to do given how embarrassed I am, how happy I am for Miami, and how embarrassed I am for our country. So
that the Marlins made the postseason? I mean,
Mike, can you explain to me briefly the meeting yesterday that you want to convey to me how it is that I'm supposed to talk about the shame that I had last night about our country? Can you explain to me? Because as soon as I arrived, Mike assaulted me with there were meetings and there are rules.
The rules are pretty much consistent with what they should always be, Dan, for a sports programming network, and that is find a sports tie. If you're going to have a conversation about it, don't turn a blind eye to what you find insensitive. I mean, you're a human, you have feelings, and you care about other people. But sports tie, normally the best way to go about these things, and then go off, but try to stay away from editorializing.
Rex Everett Chapman, born October 5th, 1967, is an American retired professional basketball player and social media influencer. Chapman was a high school sensation, winning numerous awards for his play. After choosing to play for his home state, University of Kentucky, he won further awards and scored over 1,000 points during his two seasons. Chapman became the first draft pick of the expansion Charlotte Hornets and played on four National Basketball Association, abbreviated to NBA teams, during a 12-year career. During his career, he averaged 14.6 points per game, had several memorable games, and appeared in two slam dunk competitions.
Really?
Rex Chapman last night, who it seems was as embarrassed as I was, wrote of the media, "These post-debate people have to fill time by breaking down that debate," in quote marks, "but they should all just sit there in silence, arms folded while the Chiron is flashing. Trump refuses to condemn white supremacy, then shouts out orders to a violent neo-fascist group." Now, sports was plenty bothered by last night. Robert Griffin was tweeting, "Some people are willing to create a race war more than a war on racism." I don't know how to handle today and all this, because this is a really happy time for Miami. And God knows, I want to actually stick to sports today. I want to talk about how happy Billy is. I want to talk about 9 p.m. Miami Heat in one of the most improbable seasons I've ever seen.
That is a late tip.
It is a late tip.
Whoa.
It's going to be hard for people. But I'm just wondering if the stick to sports applies to Masvidal as he tours Florida with Trump and ends up at top team with Trump, or what? Or Covington sitting next to him, or Dana White speaking on the Republican National Convention. How about that? Do they have to stick to sports, or no? That they're making us plenty of money, so they don't have to stick to sports over there. Nobody needs to hold Dana White or Covington or Masvidal accountable, right?
They don't work here. I mean,
they make a lot of money because
right.
of here.
Right.
Like, they make a lot of money here. They work with us. We're all promoting it together. We're all in bed together.
They do. I think Mike was simply explaining what was discussed at a meeting yesterday, and you found Rex Chapman. I mean,
I'm telling you this, okay? Having come from Cuba,
you're doing great.
Am I?
Yeah.
I hear a lot of sports
crushing
guys.
It. Yeah,
this is good.
I mean, Robert Griffin. I mean, you got them all. I mean,
the thing. I mean, there's so many things to be bothered by here, but the idea. Where is Robert Griffin now?
He's Baltimore.
Is that the third?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes, I think he's still with Baltimore.
He's still with Baltimore?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, coming from Cuba, Stugatz, and you're going to see here soon on HBO, Billy Corbin and Adam McKay have teamed up on something that's going to come out this month that's going to explain how weird Miami and Cuba and all of it is as it relates to politics, and specifically how it relates to how Cubans helped decide the election 20 years ago. This is coming out on HBO this month. I've seen it, and it's amazing. But one of the things that Cuba does is the communist government uses its athletes as propaganda tools. And so it's not a coincidence that Trump is finding the people that he can get. And those people are Masvidal and Covington and Dana White. He is calling Breitbart Sports a couple of different times, Clay Travis, because he's soliciting the meatheads. And then with Stand Back and Stand By, Proud Boys, Stand Back and Stand By, that is something that echoed from that press conference that is about white supremacy. As we have the NBA Finals in a bubble telling you, should we be playing? That sport with all its social justice messages asking you, should we be giving America this reprieve? And Mike and you guys are sitting in these meetings where desperately our company is trying to pull us back to, there are a million playoff games today. Look at all of this. Sports, sports, sports. But everything outside the bubble feels like it's burning, sometimes literally. And we're supposed to sit that out? Like, we're supposed to sit that out, or we're just supposed to wave around athletes and say, well, here's their opinion. Here's Rex Chapman's opinion. But I don't have an opinion as a sports show. I'm just going to sit this one out during a time where America seems upside down, fractured, and freedom seems in jeopardy.
Right. Well, I think you use Rex Chapman as an entree into what it is you want to say. I mean, I think that's all this
company
Rex
is. Rex Chapman said it, though. Rex, I mean, look at what you watched last night. No, we've never seen anything like that in the history of American politics. We have never seen what we witnessed last night.
It was embarrassing. It was hard to explain to my children what it
is
they were watching.
The best we can do after 8 years. How is that possible that that's the best we could do?
Conversely, we haven't seen under 500 teams make the MLB playoffs, or it's very rare that you see a 5 seed make it all the way to the NBA finals, right?
8 baseball playoff games in a single day.
Never seen that.
Unprecedented.
How you feeling, Billy?
Not today, Dan. I mean, I should be excited, right? But I'm not excited. Because I know how quickly things can fall. You know how short a 3-game series is, Dan? It's 3 games. And it's best of 3, which means you only need to win 2 games. So a 3-game series can be a 2-game series. And if you lose a 1 game in the 2-game series, then it's pretty much over. This thing could all fall apart by the bottom of the first inning.
I mean,
I should be more positive, right?
I mean, the Indians already with a must-win today. How about that?
I mean, Bieber, what was that? Bieber's supposed to be the best pitcher in baseball? What was that disaster?
Garrett Cole happened.
Overpaid, this Bieber. Oh, he's only making $500,000. You should be making less. That was a disgrace, what he did last night. Sorry.
How depressing was that?
It's the disgrace from last night everyone's talking about on my timeline.
Bieber's.
Nothing happened in Cleveland. I assumed it was that.
How depressing do you imagine it is, though, to turn on your television and immediately Aaron Judge is hitting the ball? If you don't like the Yankees and want them out of here with random ball, and Aaron Judge is hitting a ball, 7 miles. Like, can you imagine?
And Stanton, who had 4 of the worst at bats you'll ever see in your entire life, hits a monster dong on the 5th. I mean, crazy.
It has been a minute since I have seen the fearful Billy this happy. Maybe his wedding day, because he is wearing his Marlins gear. This is the music that is playing in his soul right here. Billy, are you disputing anything I'm saying? I feel like this is as happy. You're scared, but I see you super energetic this morning in ways I'm not used to seeing you. And I think it's because Marlins baseball gives you a postseason game. You are a guy who takes opening day off from work because it's a national holiday. I feel like you're right now radiant.
Happiest been since my wedding day. Let me say this very quietly because my wife's here, but I only know my wife for 10 years. It's been 17 years since we've been in the playoffs. Man. I'm sorry. I love you.
He is. He looks buoyant, and I want your help with something, okay? Because One of the things sports fans of a sports team need, okay, is the media member who has said the thing that allows them to go after the media member. But very few people are talking about the Marlins, and the Marlins also have very few fans, and so that person has become, Billy, me. The person has become me.
Whoa, the Marlins tied for the league lead in attendance this year, Dan Le Batard.
That's a good point.
Were there no baseball games that allowed anybody in? Were there none? There was not a rogue Jacksonville in football that allowed like a couple of fans in? Everyone had zero attendance this year?
No, but don't worry, because for the League Championship Series and the World Series, fans will be back, hopefully.
Okay.
In a bubble, though.
Is that in a bubble?
It's just family members, right?
No. They're going to sell tickets, I think.
Really?
I think that you could go to – yeah, I think that the plan is to go to have fans at these World Series games, what? Similar to some football games.
Full capacity? Like,
no. Don't be silly.
Okay.
I legitimately was confused whether you said fans or fams, because that's the time we're living in right now, where some basketball game are played just between, you know, in front of fans who are fam. But what I wanted to ask you, Billy, because Marlins fans need somebody to be mad at, and not a lot of people have talked about this team, and admittedly, I have been negative about this team, but my reason for not conceding or apologizing to Jeter the way your fan base wants me to is because I don't believe that 60 games where you get outscored by 40 runs is representative of, oh, it's fixed. Jeter did it right. Now, tanking allows you to fix your team, but do you even believe, like, after 60 games, you can be as hopeful as you want. Are you someone who believes, well, we all owe Jeter an apology. He fixed it because they played 60 games, two games over 500, and were outscored by 40 runs.
I know what you're doing here. You're trying to lean into this bad media guy vibe that you got going right now. But I have bad news for you, Dan. You're not at the top of the food chain of the media members that the Marlins fans hate. It's Ricky Botalico. That guy is never going to get let off the hook, Ricky Botalico.
So former Phillies pitcher from the 90s, Ricky
That's
Botalico.
Right.
Closer.
Ricky Botalico of CSN Philadelphia or something like that. I don't even know. Referred to the Marlins as bottom feeders after the first series the Phillies were playing, and that's been a rallying cry all year. Hashtag bottom feeders.
But Dan, if they were playing a normal season through 60, 31-29, is what we'd be thrilled with that.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean anything. The first Marlin team that in 1993 started the season 30-31 and finished with almost 100 losses. Like, that's what a baseball season does to a young team that's not quite ready for this. But I ask you seriously, like, because I am wondering, Billy, as a Marlins fan, do you feel like Jeter is owed some sort of apology? Even you were hard on him at the beginning.
I think, well, first of all, they can't play 162 games because there's only 60 games this year, so there's nothing they can do about that, right? They won the games they had to win, and other teams didn't do it, so they got in. I mean, I think that for everyone, it was a surprise that the Marlins are here because they thought that this rebuild would take longer than it did. And next year, if they play a full season, we'll find out how far along they actually are.
But what you say, the rebuild would take longer than it did, we're still in the rebuild, and I don't believe anything's been proven. Like, I don't believe they've proven anything by getting to the playoffs over 60 games, other than this is an unbelievably strange season where 16 teams are in the playoffs.
Well, I think that they've proven that they have depth in the minor leagues, right? They lost a ton of people, and they brought up guys who were probably too ripe and probably wouldn't have been playing under normal circumstances. But they have organizational depth that they didn't have before, where they were able to plug holes and kind of patch things and make their way to where they are today. Now, when we play a full season, we'll see how far along they actually are. And I think in terms of like fan outrage with Jeter and what happened when they first took over, I think that was coming back to a lot of the betrayals where you have the guys, you raise the, you know, they grow up within the organization and then you trade them away. Once these guys start making money, once, you know, we're 4 or 5 years into it and these young prospects who they've accumulated are worth money, then you kind of will see what are they going to do with those guys, right? Because this is like 2006 again, right, with the Marlins when they had all the young prospects and it was a surprise season. It's like, wow, look at these guys. This is a surprising team. This team made the playoffs though, right? But the team in 2006, they eventually outplayed those rookie contracts, and then they got expensive and eventually were traded away. I think that's when you really can see if this is different than it was before. I mean, they valued organizational depth. They valued having a good farm system, which the other regime didn't seem to value as much. They were more win now, where they're trying to build long term. But we'll see if things are different when these guys are going to be due money and if they're going to be willing to pay the guys the money that they're due.
Dan, if you look back, even last year, through 60 games, the teams that were in first place through 60 games last year, AL East, it was the Yankees, Central, it was the Twins, the West was the Astros. All those teams went on to win their division, make it to the playoffs. They were in first after 60 games. The team that would have been left out was the World Series champion.
Okay, 60 games don't mean anything, Stugatz. 60 games are not the way. It's barely a third of what we're talking about. But to Billy's point, you tell me, Billy, because to my way of thinking, some of the things that you said, while they are totally logical, to, yes, and their farm system is good. But if I tell you that what you're trading is Stanton, former MVP, Yelich, former MVP, and Marcell Ozuna, who could have been the MVP this year, if I tell you that's what I'm trading, the bare minimum you could do while tanking and getting cheap players is to replenish my farm system. Like, it's literally the bare minimum that you can do. That they've done it possibly successfully is a reason for celebration. But the construct of tanking, betraying your fan base, and then trading your young players because it's such a business and baseball doesn't care if you're bad for years at a time, like, of course you're going to replenish the farm system. It's almost impossible not to if all you're doing is spending that money on cheap players.
I mean, but in the Ozuna trade they got today's game one starter in a playoff series that they haven't been in 17 years. In the JT Realmuto trade, they got Sixto Sanchez, which wasn't even mentioned in those trades. And now the Phillies are probably going to lose JT after 2 years. The Yelich trade hasn't paid off, right? The Stanton trade, while at the time I'm saying, you know what, I think they should be getting back more than they get an MVP, they got rid of all that money that they couldn't afford to pay him. So, I mean, we are where we are, Dan. It's been 3 years.
They're in the playoffs.
It's been 17 years since a playoff game. Can't we just be happy for today until they pitch and then things may fall
Cha-ching.
Apart.
Time for some ads.
Way to have faith, Billy.
He is. He's such an interesting combination of scared and happy. It's how I imagine him having sex. Speaking of fighters at rallies, Covington last night was, with the Trump family. And what I wanted to ask you, the audience, and you, the shipping container, and it's an honest question, is who is using whom better as a propaganda tool between those two? Because Covington has turned himself into a fighter people are paying attention to only because he's playing this card. And I'm not even sure how sincere it is. He's good. I shouldn't say only because he's a good fighter. But his last fight is the weakest competitive event ever after which a president has phoned somebody. Like, a president doesn't phone somebody after you beat Woodley, who's lost his last couple of fights and refuses to use his hands anymore. That's not where the president makes telephone calls. So I ask the question genuinely, which is the one being used more as a tool? Is it Covington or is it Trump? Because Covington has absolutely turned this into a marketing campaign where he's sitting with, was he sitting with the family? Was he sitting with the Trumps last night?
Yeah.
Like, he has turned himself into sort of what Conor McGregor is by playing a professional wrestling heel. I really do think it's an act, Stugatz. I think that this dude is not sincere. He's turning up the volume on stuff, and here he is sitting next to the president of the United States.
He was invited to be a special guest and to sit with the family at the debate last night. I think it benefits Covington a lot more, don't you?
Kidding me? A fighter, a UFC fighter, getting an audience with the president? He's got to be loving it. If it was an act, it certainly isn't anymore.
Masvidal, see, it's not an act with Masvidal. Masvidal actually is going to campaign with Trump around here. He's not acting. This is not like a gimmick. I feel like Covington is fairly obviously, I'd be curious to talk to Ariel about this because I don't know Covington's total history. But I think that he just saw an opportunity here to simply do something as a professional wrestler. And now he's getting marketing you simply can't buy as an athlete of his caliber. There's no such thing as this marketing. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Stugatz, is I heard during the break Freddie Coleman talking about the pressure that would be under LeBron if he loses tonight. And I think that LeBron at this point has to be largely immune to pressure in these situations, given that he's played 230 of these games in the playoffs. I saw the stat the other day. Iguodala is second, and he's like at 160, and Iguodala is older than LeBron.
LeBron is 1-8 in game one of the NBA Finals. He's gone on to win three titles after losing game one of the NBA Finals, but I do understand what Freddie is saying. The pressure gets ratcheted up because...
Oh, wait a minute. I'm not saying that Freddie is not right, that more pressure arrives. What I am asking you, because I find it such a hackneyed way to analyze what it is that's happening, the way that a pressure will apply to LeBron James. This is what I'm asking you. Given that he has played in so many of these games, given that he has felt game six in Boston, where it was, where he was really up against it with the Miami Heat, where the blueprint was going to blow up, he was never going to have won a championship. Like, Paul George reacted to pressure. Remember, he was talking about his mental health, and he was talking about how terrible he felt, and he reacted to that pressure in the next game by scoring 35 points.
Right.
That's Paul George.
Yes.
That's how Paul George reacted to the pressure that we're talking about when it comes to LeBron James. LeBron James has played so many of these damn games that I got to imagine they all feel the same at this point. It's Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours of expertise. You do anything for 10,000 hours, you're going to be an expert. Like, how, you tell me why there would be pressure before, you know, maybe the last 5 minutes of we're down 3-0.
But you think tonight just feels like another game to LeBron James? I mean, it's NBA Finals game one. He's got precious little time left to get these championships.
Not like another game, just like another finals game, and he's played more of them in the last decade. Like, they're just games with more intensity, and the fans aren't even there this time to actually put pressure on him.
I think the opponent being a 5 seed, being his former team without a superstar and him having the two best players on the court, I understand what you're saying.
How will it impact him? Tell me how.
Well, I don't think it will in game one, but I do think if they lose game one.
Tell me how. I want to hear from you. You give me a numerical explanation, empirical, for the pressure is going to fall on LeBron James and what's going to happen after that. As the guy who's always saying, be careful, LeBron's going to do that thing again where he reminds everybody in the league that he's the best player we've ever seen.
If you lose game one to the Heat, a 5 seed with the two best players on the court, I think it could have an impact and an effect on LeBron games 2, 3, and 4, where because the pressure, and he's feeling that pressure, and perhaps some people don't play as well when they're feeling that type of pressure.
So you think he's going to get scared? You're saying, okay.
I think there's potential for LeBron to get scared here. I do. Dan, it's a 5 seed. They are the overwhelming favorites to win this series. I mean, the NBA teams with the two best players on the court do not lose these series.
But the pressure of expectations is something he's been living with since he's 16.
But something that he hasn't been living with is the clock winding down. This is a 35-year-old player.
He's got to get him.
He keeps trying to change the math, right? Because he's not going to catch Jordan on count. Well, we all agree there. But he's changed the math because he won one for Cleveland. Now, if he can win one in three different NBA cities, being the centerpiece of it, that's legendary stuff that we've never, ever seen. But he's doing it against a team that finds itself 6 years after they were depleted by their assets and he left without taking that fifth-year option. If he loses to Pat Riley, that is an embarrassing moment. I disagree with Freddie Coleman that it's the most embarrassing saying on his resume when I don't think he'll ever escape what happened against the Dallas Mavericks.
But he's going to get mocked here. If he doesn't win this series, he's going to get
mocked. But he gets mocked every time he loses.
But guys, this is what I would say to you, okay? Because for those of you listening, I am not arguing that there won't be enormous pressure on him. I'm arguing that he's numb to it. I'm arguing that he's immune to it. I'm arguing, you guys have been calling him a choker for 10 years, and you're not allowed anymore after what happened Cleveland over Golden State. Like, Putting that pressure on him.
He's 3-6 in the finals. I'm allowed to call him whatever I want.
Okay, but you said you gave him two championships when he won against Golden State, didn't you? You made it four championships in your personal record book.
I did.
Yes, you're going to continue to apply that pressure, and you're going to continue to feel like it matters. And I'm here to tell you that to that person, I don't believe it does. He's done it too many times, Stugatz. Like, I understand there's fire all around him, and I'm telling you that this guy, it's been a long time since you saw him actually burn. It's what Mike's talking about. It's JJ Barea. It's 10 years ago where you saw, oh wait, the pressure impacted him. The pressure made him hide in his house for 2 months after that, and he grew the Tom Hanks Castaway beard. Like that pressure got to him. It's been 10 years of him living in that frying pan. Like, maybe.
And five more finals losses.
I mean. Yeah. The only thing that he feels differently this time, if he loses this one, considering how extended the season was, and it was neutral sites and all those things, is mortality, is his playing career, is the fact that he's 35 years
old. Well, he's not. This is the thing about him. As great as he can be, he's not as good as he was. Like, that's not up for dispute. You can't be. It's not possible to be, given where he set the bar and given what his age is. I am not saying that he will not look around down 3-0 and be like, oh, bleep, what have I done? I'm not saying that. I'm saying that his performance is going to be his performance. Like, he's going to be great because he's really great at basketball.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. News from the Dan Le Batard with Stugatz Nation. Someone has just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. I love this Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. This from Bette Midler @_theSwindler. Quote, classic Le Batard pivot. When he's wrong, Marlins make the playoffs, doesn't count, I'm still right. Josh Allen MVP, I don't think he'll win the Super Bowl, so I'm still right.
Not wrong yet.
You're not.
Bette Midler Swindler?
You got me, Bette Midler Swindler. You really cornered me on that one. I like to be right, unlike you, who likes to be wrong.
You didn't say it doesn't count with the Marlins.
Of course not. I want the Marlins. I always love when Miami does well at things. I'm just not willing to apologize after 3 games to Josh Allen or after 60 to Derek Jeter.
It's been 15 games for Josh Allen.
Or admit when I'm wrong. I'm not interested in that. Go somewhere else if you want a host that admits that he's wrong. So Ariel Helwani is with us, and we're going to talk to Sarah Spain or Billy. I don't know what's going to happen with Billy and Sarah Spain. She's a Cubs fan. He's a Marlins fan.
There has to be a bet on this series, right? There has to be.
We will see what happens between them. Is Billy confident enough to bet his team?
You better be getting brats.
Are you confident enough before we go to Ariel Helwani here, Billy? Okay, very good. Ariel Helwani with us now on ESPN Radio. If you are interested in fighting, no one covers it better than this guy. So find his stuff wherever it is that your devices find it, because he's the Howard Cosell of MMA. Extraordinary at what he does. So Colby Covington, Ariel, and thank you for being on with us. Can you tell us how much, as he's sitting with the president's family yesterday, and I was asking earlier, like, who is using more the other guy as a propaganda tool? Who is using the tool more? Is it Covington or is it Trump? Because I think this thing with Covington is almost all an act. Is it?
Wow, that is a really tough question. Good to talk to you again, guys. And yes, Josh Allen is the MVP. It started as a work, and then it became a shoot, to steal phrases from the world of pro wrestling. He is so far in, he being Colby Covington, he is so far into the gimmick that it has become his reality. So I hear a lot of people, I heard you and Bomani talk about it last week, is it real, is it not? It's real. He believes all of this, number one, because it has gotten him this far, and number two, because he is so close to the sun now. He is hanging out with the sons and with the president and all that. He would never turn his back on this quote unquote gimmick or this narrative or whatever you want to call it. So I think that it might be the kind of answer where it sounds like I'm sitting on the fence. Who's using who more? I think they're both using each other very well, and I think they're both capitalizing off of it. But you know, it's funny. Your boy Jorge Masvidal, he's going on a like a parade of Florida from Orlando to Miami to, I think, Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, Miami, and one other spot on Saturday with
he's
Trump
going, he's ending at a top team.
Yeah, he's ending it there. So, you know, I think a lot, you know, they're going to fight. That's what the UFC wants. And I think a lot of fans are like, oh, you know, Jorge, take down the Trump guy. They don't realize that Jorge's probably more educated about Trump's policies and a bigger true Trump fan, as he discussed with you, than Colby is. And I think people's heads are spinning now because their whole world has turned upside down.
And Covington, I mean, I'm reading here some quotes, Ariel, that Covington says that it saved his career. They told him he wasn't entertaining enough. And he says here in these quotes I'm reading that he realized that he needed to be entertaining in order to save his career.
He grew up a pro wrestling fan, and he was a very vanilla fighter. No one cared about him. He was on the undercard. He was just a guy on the roster, your typical, you know, wrestler who's a tough out, but no one's emotionally invested in his journey. And then all of a sudden, it's, you know, the rise of Donald Trump and the red hat and everything, and he took a page out of pro wrestling, a page that Vince McMahon himself wouldn't even dare write these days, and he ran with it. And it all started 2.5 years ago in Brazil, when he got on the microphone, almost 3 years ago now, in Brazil, he got on the microphone and he called the locals filthy animals. People got mad. He was in his hotel room. Security had to stand outside of it. Then he went and fought Rafael dos Anjos, got on the microphone after the win, called out Tyron Woodley, who was the champion, and on it went. And every single time, he kept pushing it more and more and more and more, to the point where we saw what he said a couple weeks ago after his win over Woodley, which I thought was 100% racist. I thought it was disgusting, abhorrent, all those things and more, and equally disappointed that the UFC has not condemned his speech and, in fact, have said that, you know, they don't do that sort of thing when they have a long history of doing that sort of thing, meaning punishing people who say things that are offensive. This was offensive to a lot of people, and I'm disappointed that they haven't said anything about it.
Ariel, thanks for being on with us, sir. We always appreciate the insight.
Go Josh Allen. Go Bills.
You can get, really, he is exceptional. And if you want to know anything about fighting, that is the place to go. Just check out his podcast with Daniel Cormier, or just his podcast, because it is some good listening. We will, and it's informed listening. We will badger Billy into making a bet with Sarah Spain next.